podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Hi, I'm Chris Lewecki, Senior Digital Copywriter for DIA, and we're here today with Mr. Nielsen Hopps, who is Executive Editor of the Pink Sheet and Script, who just chaired the DIA Global Annual Meeting session titled Interchangeable Biosimilars, A Global Perspective. Thank you, first of all, for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with the DIA.
It's a pleasure to have you here, too. What topics were discussed in the session you just chaired?
Well, we had a great session with a variety of panelists. We looked at the question of how biosimilars are used and paid for and developed across the globe. We had a regulator from Norway, and we had manufacturers from the U.S. looking at sort of kind of what's happening in the different markets. You know, the question in the U.S. on biosimilars is how to really boost uptake. In many respects, the U.S. is behind the rest of the world in terms of kind of having developed a pathway only recently compared to sort of the several years prior in Europe. And so one of the big questions was sort of kind of what lessons from Europe can payers, regulators, and sponsors learn as they move into the U.S. and sort of kind of how to make this product class as robust as everyone wants it to be.
We often hear, especially in the DIA environment, of the need for global regulatory harmonization. Are there areas on a global perspective of scientific, I guess would be the word, harmonization that is keeping uptake of these products from becoming more effective in the market?
Well, one of the big questions is whether U.S. applications can rely on data from foreign studies. That's not so much an uptake question as an approval question. Obviously, sort of kind of once it gets on the market, sort of the uptake could be driven by use of those studies to increase acceptance and sort of kind of, you know, reimbursement and those kinds of questions. But one of the things that FDA has to decide is whether it's going to allow and to what degree it might allow for kind of foreign studies to support biosimilar applications.
Did the ICH E17 or multi-regional clinical trials, does that in any way impact the clinical development of biosimilars?
With biosimilars, the standard is not so much a clinical one, but looking at what's called, and I'm blanking on the term, I'm sorry.
The originator.
Yeah, well, yes.
Or the innovator, excuse
Right, you have to compare it to the originator, but it's not a bioequivalent per se. It's not a clinical test unless you're looking at interchangeability. It's a comparability question. So it's not so much a clinical trials issue as sort of as a using a reference product that was approved in a foreign country as opposed to a reference product that was approved in the U.S. that they can sort of do those comparability studies.
Okay, thank you. You know, the ultimate goal is patients and getting patients to take these products so long as they're safe and effective and good for them. We have 80 different countries at this annual meeting. Are there cultural differences that you've seen in the uptake of biosimilars, or has the uptake of biosimilars, in your opinion, been driven primarily by the pricing benefits that they deliver?
I think it's mostly the mighty dollar, or in this case, the tiny dollar, that sort of kind of drives uptake for the most part. If a health system or just sort of a U.S. payer thinks it can save money by switching to a biosimilar, it will. There are obviously different designs of health systems throughout the globe. I had Stenar Madsen of the Norwegian Medicines Institute on our panel, and he was talking about sort of kind of this more collective approach that Norway has compared to the U.S. in terms of its health system. It's just sort of a single entity, and there is sort of a more of a collective purpose that if we all sort of kind of decide to do this, we can sort of all benefit from them. And that was from one of the cases he was making there. You'll see in the U.S. there's much more of a decision by payers being made in what they're looking at after their patients in terms of sort of kind of more sort of kind of a fragmented system. So that's a different approach.
This was also not on the list, but it was something I learned in this session. Why is there an interchangeability designation in the United States?
That's just how the law was written. Our panelists had a great exchange about sort of kind of whether that's sort of kind of a benefit or a detriment to the products. On the one hand, it sort of kind of provides an extra level of surety that you know, patients and providers can use for it, but on the other hand, it sort of kind of creates another hurdle that a sponsor would have to go through. I think the congressional authors of the of the program thought it was important to make that distinction because it's such a new category of product, and sort of kind of this way it sort of kind of it allows four different kinds of products to come onto the market in the fashion in which they're able to.
I found out about it an hour ago, in fact, so that's how new it is. Before I get to the end, do you see therapeutic areas that you think are ripe for biosimilars? Are there particular disease areas that you think biosimilars could make a real impact short term?
So it's really sort of a question for sponsors where they see the best market opportunity in terms of developing that. What we've seen in the market for the most part is the ones that have been approved and used have been mostly sort of kind of on the medical benefit side, and we've yet to see sort of one that was sort of going to be substituted in the pharmacy, and the question was sort of kind of how that kind of automatic substitution might work is one of the questions we were exploring in the panel. And one of the great reasons for being at DIA is to sort of hear from all these experts and learn what they are thinking about and doing. So,
before I let you go, would you define that concept of medical benefit? I mean, you would think every drug would be developed for its medical benefit, but it seems to be used a specific way in this specific context.
Sure, that's an insurance term mostly. It's for kind of that, if you think about sort of the pharmacy benefit is for products that you go to your local neighborhood drugstore to get sort of from behind the counter from your friendly white-coated technician there. Medical benefit is more stuff that is administered in hospitals or by doctors, and it's for kind of just sort of paid for by the insurance companies in a different way, and that's for kind of what's for kind of drives the various decisions in terms of sort of how it gets reimbursed and sort of kind of what product gets used.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for explaining that. Final question, I promise.
Yes, okay.
So we're all here in Boston, and next week we will all be back at our respective jobs. What do you hope people took from the session we just left that will help them at work next week?
I mean, I think the idea that there are lots of different levers that can be pulled to change uptake of biosimilars is an important one. So kind of what decisions can regulators make? What decisions can payers make? What decisions can sponsors make? And, you know, if you're a sponsor, a regulator, or a payer, you know, you have to think about sort of kind of, you know, the decisions I make are gonna affect what those other two segments are able to do and will do for
right,
me. And so
right.
Sort of kind of if you want to limit biosimilars, there are a lot of steps you can take in that direction. If you want to increase biosimilars, there are a lot of steps in that direction too. But sort of kind of knowing sort of kind of what the various steps that you can take are is an important part of being at DIA and learning all these new issues.
If you could eliminate one popular misconception about biosimilars, what would it be?
I guess I would eliminate the idea that they're not real products, that they're not as carefully vetted by the FDA as other FDA-approved products.
Thank you for your flexibility.
Anytime. Really appreciate being here at DIA and helping with the educational activities.
We really hope you've enjoyed this interview with Mr. Hobbs, executive editor of the Pink Sheet and Script on biosimilars and their global applicability. For DIA Insights, I'm Chris Slowecki. Thank you.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.